Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning into This Week in Mormons. We're happy to bring you another week of This Week in Mormons. It's great to have you here. Thanks for taking the time.
It's a lot of weeks in Mormons.
Thanks. You know, what can we do? Thanks for taking the time to join us, though, folks. Hope you'll join us at thisweekinmormons.com.
Are you slow clapping, Jeff? What's going on over there?
Often, well, see, I do work alone. So when things go well, I'm the only person I can congratulate. And so I'm very accustomed to this. Yesterday, for example, it was International or National, what do they call it now? Administrator's Day. It used to be Secretary's Day.
That's not a real thing. That's a made up thing by oppressed people.
It was Secretary's Day.
That'd be like 200 years ago. They're just like, no, it's Slave Day. I'm taking the day off.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't have a day.
So one of my colleagues.
Nope, we all voted, and for sure this is Slave Day.
Yeah. And one of my colleagues called me the day before, and he's like, so you're taking Wednesday off? And I was like, why would I take Wednesday off? And he said, it's National Administrator's Day or whatever. And I was like, first of all, I am not an administrator. Thank you very much. And secondly, that's a brilliant idea. So I didn't take the day off, but the company took me to lunch. It was delightful. And by taking me to lunch.
Wait, did the company recognize that it was a day for you?
No, because I'm not an administrator. But I am an administrator because I am my own boss. And my own secretary, basically. And so they took me to lunch. And by take me to lunch, it means I went to a place I like and I used my company card to pay for it. It was wonderful.
Attaboy.
Thank you.
You got him.
Thank you very much. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm really well. I'm really well. And just sitting here in Salt Lake this week, it's lovely. It was raining when I got in. I was very disappointed. You know I take the train from the airport.
Yes.
And when I land in Salt Lake and it's raining, there's a part of me that just looks for another flight. I'm like, maybe I don't have to stay here. But I did. I'm here. And the weather has improved.
Well, see, it's a sunshiny day. I believe you. So you finally checked out the newer Temple film, didn't you?
I did. I went yesterday and last night I actually did the Temple. 6 o'clock session in the Ochre Mountain.
I thought
it was lovely. I did not realize they don't have clothes for you to rent.
Ochre does not have clothing rental. Interesting. I didn't know that.
And so I luckily had my Temple bag in the car, but it's my Temple. I always rent clothes because that's my Temple bag from when I was on my mission.
Yeah.
And so that's a 32 waist, not a 36 waist. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I had to borrow the family I was with. Their dad's. He's a fit man, a tiny, wiry fit man, and I borrowed his shirt to wear. And then I remembered that they won't let me roll my sleeves up, and so I was this bulging Hulk with 32 waist pants that I had no business being in. That, like, breathe in, suck it in, tighten it up, put that belt on. And I had this shirt that, like, the cuffs went down just below my elbow, and we pulled them tight to get them to tighten up. And then the whole time, I've got one, of course, like my tie and stuff, and it's all turning yellow because it's 12 years old. That stuff deserves to be just thrown away and replaced.
Yeah.
But I've got, like, my mission tie on there, and it's connecting the dots on this poor 16-inch neck on this thing. I'm a 19-inch neck. I'm a big necked fella. And I don't know if those are inches or size, but I'm size 19. And so I'm like, I've got this poor tie that's just hanging these things together. And the guy officiating that session was just, I mean, he would make eye contact with me and give me the head shake. Like, no, how could you come to the temple in this?
Hold on, though. How do you not have clothes that fit? I mean, you were a temple worker in Hawaii. And by then it was not mission era. You had clothing then.
Well, no, I was still I was in college in Hawaii, man. I was like uber fit and I was still wiry. I'd still never worked out a day in my life.
Are you telling me that
post college?
Yeah.
Post college where I've like gotten into CrossFit and like bulked up a little bit. Now I'm a grown man. I'm not a boy anymore, Jeff.
Uh-huh. And so you're telling me CrossFit, the positive of CrossFit is watching your waist expand by 4 inches. That's one of the positive results.
It's my overall self has expanded by 4 inches.
And that's the goal of CrossFit, is to have just genuine expansion.
As a 6'7", 250-pound man, I'm not supposed to have a 32-inch waist anymore, Jeff.
Like Russia to its neighbors, the goal is to just expand. It doesn't matter how. I'm just
a bigger person.
You just want to be bigger.
I have a bigger chest. I have a bigger waist. My legs are bigger. I have years of cycling in me now. I'm a Clydesdale in its truest form, Jeff. I'm not against. Well, I mean, maybe I could go down to a 34 or something, but I don't care. I feel very happy where I am. The point of this though is that my pants in my trunk are not made for me, and the shirt, and then the whole thing together, the whole ensemble, was quite comical.
Can't you? But isn't there a distribution center in the Deseret Book, like three blocks from your apartment?
Yeah, you know, and that's what everybody said as I was walking out. Maybe it's, hey, buddy, maybe it's time to get some new clothes. Well, yes, you're right.
Did the temple workers actually say stuff to you? Did they say, like, hey, it might be time to...
No, they won't say anything. Okay. They won't say anything to you. The actual instruction, as we've, after my Nauvoo escapade, which we had somebody write in and talk to us about it. If you remember, I went up there and had to borrow my best friend's clothing to go to the temple, and so I had pants that went sort of mid-calf, and, you know, again, the shirt that wouldn't button and all that kind of stuff. But the instruction they have is to check your recommend and then thank you for coming to the temple.
Well, yeah.
Right? They don't care what you get there with. They assume that it's your Sunday best, which it was in both of these cases.
But then they still contacted you afterwards and reprimanded you, or what?
No, I was not reprimanded. I'm just saying I got eye looks from the guy officiating with head shakes, sort of just the look of disgust, right? He could tell I was a vagrant that had no reason being there, and perhaps he was right.
You know, the best thing about the Ochre Mountain Temple is it's situated in my dream community of Daybreak. What a lovely place to live. Stepford, Utah.
Daybreak's the worst, man. Daybreak is awful.
How could
Daybreak
it be awful?
Daybreak is an hour away from anywhere.
The homes are so cute. You have to bear in mind, when I look at real estate listings, and I do sometimes in Utah, because I realize I could pay less than my rent for a one-bedroom apartment in D.C. and have like a whole giant house in Utah.
Yeah.
And so you look at somewhere like Daybreak, and I'll be like, oh, look, I could have a 2,200-square-foot house, and my mortgage would be like $1,200 a month.
You should do that.
I would love to do that. That would be a dream. Just an absolute dream. I pay more than that for a one-bedroom apartment. And I'm not even in D.C. proper. I'm just in Virginia on the other side of the river. But ain't cheap. But that's life, you know? I'm blessed that I was raised in Southern California, where I am accustomed to high rents and real estate, where it's just how I assume things are. That's all.
Okay.
Okay, fine.
Whatever.
Fine. Good. Good. It's going to be good.
It's good. It's good.
So I got to go to the see my beloved Angels were in town this week.
Oh yeah,
they
I saw you wearing the hat while at the National Stadium.
Yeah, usually I'm a happy Nats fan. I'm not a bandwagoner, but I live here. I support the Nats. They're National League. I have no problem with this. The Angels are American League. Not a big issue for me. But when the two come together,
and never the twain shall meet.
Yeah.
That's when you can love
one
them.
Must make a choice, and Angels always trump any other team. So, for the first time in my life, I wore an opposing team's hat and trundled off to Nationals Park. And it was kind of fun, for one, actually rooting against the Nats, like actively yelling at their players and telling them they sucked and having fun. And there were these awesome kids in front of me that kept looking back at me as I was cheering for the Angels. And you would have loved this, Al. It was very you. We developed this banter with the kids back and forth, and anytime the Nats would do something well, they'd like look back at me and laugh and point their fingers. And then the Angels scored some runs, and I stood up and I said, "You are converted to the gospel of Angels! Yes!" And it was awesome. These kids, I just played with kids the whole
time. Did Danielle go with you? I can't imagine she would enjoy this.
Oh, she was laughing. She was having a good time. The kids were great. I'm telling you, they were awesome. And so you would love this part. You know how in Major League Baseball, basically any team, when the home team batters come to bat, they have like pre-selected salt music that they just play for them, and the batters get to choose what they want to play, right? Everyone does it. Some people, they come up, it's like Metallica. Some guys, it's country music. For a lot of the Hispanic players, it's some like Rock de Español that comes up. Everyone does whatever they do. So the
not to be racist, let's be honest.
I'm just saying, I've never seen a Spanish as a second language speaker in Major League Baseball come up there with some kind of... It's never happened. But so this pinch hitter gets up for the Nats. I love this guy. All of a sudden, this is what starts playing. Let it go! Let it go! And I'm sitting there saying, wait a minute. This guy is using Let It Go as his approach the plate music? He is the greatest human alive. So my hat goes
strong.
My hat goes off to Zach. What was his name? Zach Waters? It was awesome. It was.
What if Bryce Harper chose an Afterglow song or something by Sons of Provo?
Sons of Provo would be a strong choice.
Dude, that's missionary.
I think that we are not utilizing our missionary talents. The Brethren should issue an edict, and I also believe we should readopt the term edict when things come from Salt Lake, that stipulates that Mormon athletes must use church-inspired music.
Anytime Jimmer makes a basket, it is, I heard him come.
Well, look at... look at Jabari Parker. Jabari Parker is deciding to go pro, right? So they...
Yeah.
They should require...
After a Monster Jam, the song that would play is...
I'm trying to think of something from Michael McLean's The Garden. That would be over the top.
Oh, Michael McLean would be...
It's mine!
Will he ever come? Is he going to appear? Well, the one that I've been waiting for. Discover I'm
forever
here.
Someday. We can be together. Anything from that soundtrack is fair play. If I were a baseball player... I would,
as you walk up,
I'd have that one.
Be.
Can he? It doesn't matter. Da, 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 da. Can he?
Can you hear me?
I'm convinced. Celebrating the Light is one of the greatest albums ever produced, Mormon or other. It is.
We have so many EFY songs at our disposal. I mean, all that is
no,
there.
No, everything all on Celebrating the Light is better than an EFY song. That one when it's all, I don't believe it. We can't go down. It's just so 80s. I love it. Speaking of Jabari, though, how do you feel about that, being someone who cares about basketball? Give us the rundown
with
of this,
old Jabari. So Jabari, I mean... All right. Well, so he's going pro, right? He's got enough potential that people are not going to want to pass him up, right? He's not good enough right now to be a monster player in there. I don't think in the NBA, but I think he's easily a good enough player to develop into something very, very meaningful. And so that's what these guys are going to be gambling on is we should get him now, develop him for the next 2 years and put him in. Like, build him into our system player and then just crush it with him.
Will he be?
And maybe he can come out and do great, but like, I just don't see, I mean, I don't see him as like a LeBron James level player.
Is he better than Jimmer? Bryant.
I think there's a lot of people, well, anybody that's ever played defense is better than Jimmer. There's a lot of that.
That's racist, though.
No, it's not. And so, good for him. I mean, he's jumping at the money and off he goes. The downside to what he's doing, I'm kind of bummed out that he's not bothering to go on a mission. I like the idea that sort of the David Archuleta, Sean Bradley for better or worse, some of these guys that took the opportunity to, in a very public way, say, no, I'm gonna take 2 years out and go and serve the Lord. It caused a lot of people to say, hold on, let me, you know, what is this that you're doing? Let's look at this. I think it's a great conversation piece for a lot of people that are fans and follow you and that kind of thing. So Jabari, I mean, there's no more public figure at this moment at Duke than Jabari Parker. It would have been an excellent opportunity
There's that porn star girl. She might rival him.
Coach Krzyzewski?
No, you know, you said there's no more prominent figure. Jabari's up there or there is...
Krzyzewski, the porn star.
The freshman who has been
slash basketball
paying
coach.
Tuition with porn. So, one or the other. But, yes.
Yeah, so, I would have loved to have seen that happen. And honestly, I mean, in a world of basketball, right, you go away for 2 years, you come back, give it 6 months, and you're right back where you were. It's, like, I don't see there being a huge loss in that. especially if he agreed to have his other, you know, another 2 years of college come in and get him back up to snuff. I don't think he would have had a problem, but it's a very sort of money, financial driven, don't trust the future sort of move right now.
So, basically you question his testimony is what you're saying. You question his devotion to the faith.
No, I don't question his devotion or his testimony. I question his, man, I don't know. Well, because there's guys. I mean, you go pro, and a lot of people are like, "Well, this is how I'm going to be a missionary. I'm going to be a pro player that does this." It's like, yeah, you don't get the chance to be. I mean, outside of speaking at youth conferences and stuff, you don't get the chance to go talk to people about religion as a pro player because the NBA has rules, right?
They don't let you talk about religion?
Well, they're not going to let you go and do hey, come meet the guys of the Bulls. And by the way, Jabari's going to share his testimony.
I mean, Albert Pujols just hit his 500th home run the other night. And when they asked him how he felt, the first thing he said is, "I would like to thank my Lord and Savior." So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. And nobody is converting to Albert Pujols' religion because of that. You know what I mean? Like nobody, it's not setting a meaningful enough example for anybody to care.
Well,
and that's where I see the opportunity lost.
The interviewer did say, "Oh, Albert, thou almost persuadest me to be a Christian."
Almost.
Yeah.
Almost.
I guess I get. I
think it's a bad move.
I mean,
I think he's giving up a lot here.
I mean, it all comes down to personal choice, and I guess it is sad. I guess it's only sad in the sense that he's a great kid and will likely stay a great kid, and that's wonderful, and he's an example to many people. But, you know, for oneself, missing out on that experience of serving a mission, there's no substitute for it, just personal, on a personal level. There's nothing you can do to try to have the same experience. There's nothing that replicates that.
There really isn't. And, I mean, give yourself a 10-year career in the NBA, and then all of a sudden you're 30, and you haven't served a mission, and you haven't done any of this, and you've got the rest of your life to look back and be like, well, no, I'm...
But at the same time, I feel like someone like, say, David Archuleta, and I love that we're opining all about people's personal lives like we know anything, but I also think when you are in the performance arts, it might be easier to go and serve a mission. Look how the church still utilized Elder Archuleta's position and having him sing and do stuff. I mean, if you have a talented basketball player, there's not as much to do with that. It's not like you're going to go on your mission and still be able to use your basketball skills for good. Sure, he could have some pickup games and have, you know, there could be fun with it. But it's not the same as being able to march out Elder Archuleta to sing at a Christmas concert. And it's very useful in that sense. So I think in many ways it's easier to go on a mission when you're a performance artist because you are simply, you're able to adapt what you have to the mission field, which is not necessarily as easy with athletics.
I think that's dumb. I think that's dumb just because you can use it more while you're a missionary. I think it might be easier for someone to go because it's easier to use it. And there are Olympic athletes and things of that nature, these guys that go on missions all the time, right? Like, they go on a mission, they come back, and they get right back into their sport or whatever they're doing. And the idea that if he went and served the Lord, that the Lord would forsake him or put him on a different path. Or heaven forbid, he break his ankle while walking up some stairs and never recover fully to the point where he was.
Right. No, right? There's risk. And there was-
like that somehow... The path in the NBA was a better path for him than where he.
Yeah, Jabari could have served.
They could bums me out.
They could have yanked him from the States. He could have gone to a basketball like happy country. They could have sent him to Lithuania or Croatia or Spain, which all have thriving basketball cultures. It could have been great for him.
He could have played with Arvydas Sabonis.
Oh, it would have been wonderful. Can you imagine Jabari Parker just hanging out in Lithuania? Yeah, what's up? I'm the branch president in Klaipeda, living the dream. Here it is.
Here I am.
All right. Well, good for Jabari.
Well, hey, Easter this Sunday was a big day for everyone.
I enjoyed it.
First, a future this isn't funny, but a future contestant on The Bachelor died paragliding.
Oh,
it's on an upcoming season of The Bachelor. He passed away, which is going to be weird if she picks him. Because then that's doubly sad. I bet ABC milks this for all it's worth.
Maybe. His name was, by the way, not to be flippant about it, but his name...
Sexual contestant number 22.
His name was Eric Hill. He's a BYU grad, resident of Salt Lake City, and he was paragliding near Point of the Mountain in Draper when his parachute collapsed. Are you allowed to paraglide around Point on the Mountain? I mean, there's traffic everywhere. There's a prison
yes,
near there.
Yes, you are. But it was on a Sunday. He shouldn't have been there on Sunday. That's what it is.
Maybe he has left.
I'm being facetious, obviously. That's not the reason that he died. But anyway.
But
The other big news was because of him.
Oh, I loved it.
The campaign that the church did ended up being really good. I know Jeff and I both jumped in on it. That was great. It was fun to participate. It was fun to have something that we could sort of be promoting through that good Easter Sunday.
And, yeah, it went really, really well. I mean, honestly, we had, it's had over 4 million views in English now and about 1.5 or so in Spanish. So, I mean, we're up over nearly 6 million total views of this, which has to be the church's most viewed multimedia production.
You think so? Let me look.
I don't know. What's been bigger? You had 5 years ago when Elder Holland gave that really strong Easter talk. That did very, very well and went viral. And I have to imagine that might have been part of the impetus behind really driving Holy Week and doing more of it. Because the church had huge
Their
success.
Their most viewed at over 8 million is Jeff Decker, sculptor for Harley Davidson and a Mormon.
Oh, from I'm a Mormon video? I've seen that I'm a
then
Mormon
next,
video.
I believe that art is inspirational and that all inspiration comes from God video.
So Jeff Decker is more important than Jesus is what you're saying.
And then because of him, yeah. And then right below that, the I'm a Mormon, Texan, and mother of two sons ad.
That's appealing.
They were good ones, Jeff.
Texan mothers? Oh, my goodness.
People love them. They love those mothers.
I loved Easter, and I enjoyed it. And I loved the Because of Him campaign, and I think it was fun to have. It was nice to have a whole run-up thing that we could do, you know, during the week. New videos, new memes, stuff that they pushed out throughout the week. Our Easter itself was really nice, actually. Most of the time when there's been Easter, we've just had Easter-centric talks, in my experience.
Oh, that's the worst.
But our bishop actually opted to have a musical celebration, much like one would do during Christmas. So there was one speaker in the middle, but a lot of special musical numbers padding around on all sides of it that were Easter-centric, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. It was nice.
What was some of the music there?
I don't know what they were. Well, O Divine Redeemer was the closing. This woman in our ward who can sing like straight-up opera got up there and sang O Divine Redeemer, and it was awesome. The other ones, I don't know the names of the songs necessarily. There was one that went like, there's something sweet and almost kind, but he was mean and he was cruel and unrefined. There was that one, and I was trying to figure out how it played into Easter, but I enjoyed it.
Well,
but now
delightful.
He's dear.
I'm glad.
And so I'm sure.
Then there's something there that wasn't
Other than that for Easter. Also, here's a funny a little article from Religion Dispatches. Good old Holly Welker. Holly Welker, who fashions herself as she's no longer a believer, she just studies the faith. So there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fine. She's the one, she's got to get a new picture for her image. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be superficial here, people, but it's like going out of your way to take a bad photo. I'm just, I'm not saying she herself is not photogenic.
Boo!
It's just there can be better photos taken of people in general.
Yeah, like...
Like
from the eyes up.
From the eyes of what?
From the eyes up.
Oh.
Take that photo.
just the crown of her forehead. That's it. Anyway, Holly writes an article about how Mormons have a, quote...
She's got a stupid beef. No, this is dumb.
Yeah, a puzzling indifference to Easter. I think initially it starts off dumb, and then it settles in a bit better to some okay thoughts. So it starts off with how...
I walked into a
church
meeting house in Taiwan in 86 and said, Happy Easter.
And they said...
And the missionaries, who obviously didn't know their holidays, said, I thought Easter was the first Sunday of April. And she said, no. She says, obviously you don't care about Easter.
Yeah.
In our church.
You don't know what's going on. Because I've never been under the assumption that Easter is always coincides with General Conference. Otherwise, I would have firm memories of Easter always being on General Conference. Because the first weekend in April is always General Conference.
Yeah.
So I don't know where that came from. But it goes on to talk about the fact that it is true that we do not engage in as much stuff during Easter week. Because of Him is a a different example. It's something new that we're doing. But, you know, in a lot of Christian faiths, Holy Week is met with a lot of different activities and processions. Good Friday is honored. Palm Sunday is even a big thing. It's true that in general, we don't really do much in the church except for just Easter itself, I think, overall.
Wait, you want there to be more so like the Sundays surrounding Easter to get more Easter love?
Let me hit the pause button on the present and rewind, if you will, to 2002 or let's say spring of 2002. No, let's say spring of 2003. I was living in the city of Tarragona, Spain on my mission, and it was Holy Week.
I was living in a city of Rivne.
And what do they do during Holy Week in Spain? The men put on these, like, Ku Klux Klan-esque masks with pointy hats. I don't know what the history of that is, but they're multicolored, though, so it's more fun. And everyone marches around with these floats that show and dress like Romans. And I'm not saying we need to follow the Catholic thing.
Now, if I may, but Jeff, we were devout Catholic whoever really knows how to celebrate Easter well here in America.
Yeah.
And they said, all right, everybody, we just need some people to show up for this dumb parade we're doing on a Tuesday. Would you be there? No.
No. Nobody would. Culturally, it's a bigger deal.
In fact, if they would have done a Good Friday meal, I would have said, you know what? I'm going on a date on Good Friday. I don't think I can make it to your little shindig. I'll see you Sunday, Papa. And that's when I would have gone for my Easter celebration. For Easter, right, like it's less about the pomp and circumstance of what the community is doing because I don't care about that stuff. I don't care about that stuff at Christmas. I don't care about it ever. Right, like I can observe this. I mean, give me a good end sign and let me work through those articles and really have a great Easter.
Yeah.
But I don't need more showmanship, you.
Let me ask you this though. What is more important, the birth of Christ or the culmination of the atonement?
Oh, I don't know, Jeff. What's one without the other?
That's true. One cannot exist without the other, much like Harry Potter and Voldemort. But
yeah, exactly like Harry
Potter.
By the
way, let's just make sure this is out.
Oh, there's the wand. All right, we're back, people. So, we're fine.
It is interesting, though, isn't it? That culturally, Christmas, of course, is a big season for marketing purposes and sales and things like that. But we have the First Presidency Christmas devotional. We celebrate a lot of great things in the season. It is funny, though, that we don't amp up Easter as much. And I've always thought it might be in the church because we sort of, I think, more solemnly and quietly.
What do you mean we don't amp it up? What are you talking about? What's missing?
Do we have a First Presidency Easter devotional where we celebrate?
No, we don't have a First Presidency Christmas devotional either. That's true. We have a bunch of 70s that get up.
That's true.
Talk.
Now we have the random church devotional, which was awful. I'm gonna start a change.org petition to fix that one, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm not really longing for a ton more. I've honestly always felt like Easter in many ways is more sacred than Christmas, and so I've always felt like we just quietly. Respect.
You've been happy to just get your worship on, unlike Holly Welker, that attention-whoring woman who just needs more people to talk about Easter instead of just taking care of it herself.
Yeah. Here, you know what's another funny thing I learned this Easter? And this speaks to my ignorance. I never knew the full history of Easter eggs and why we have them.
Oh, about like the symbolism of Christ coming out of the tomb.
Exactly. Never knew that my whole life. Just learned that this week.
You never thought about the symbolism of an egg and why that
was. I always assumed the Easter egg was somehow related to the bunny. It was just some marketing nonsense created so people could have candy.
Well, Jeff, the point is, you are less of a man.
I'm being humble enough to admit that I learned something that I thought I should have known a long, long time ago, I guess. I'm terrible.
Yeah, well, you should have. Quit. And there's really no like, it's not like you learned that. It's just taking a minute to say, why are we messing with an egg? Where's the symbolism in this? You could have done the same thing with a Christmas tree, even though it's a pagan symbol. You could have done, yeah. I mean, anything in any of these holidays, it has a root, Jeff.
Yeah, and the root seems
take a minute
the root
to
is
think.
The root's always in Lutheran Germany, too, for some reason.
Yeah,
I swear everything we have in America is rooted in Northern Germany. I don't know why.
It might have been better, though, because most of my Easters were spent with Kinder Surprise eggs, which are much easier to equate to Jesus than maybe a traditional like egg with a yolk, where you have to cook it still to get the good stuff. In a Kinder Surprise egg, you open the chocolate and there is the toy.
And in this case, the toy being the risen Lord is what you're saying.
Right, right. So, like, in that scenario, you have the tomb, and the tomb opens, and there is a risen Lord. In this, you open the egg, and there is a maybe a trinket that can launch something small.
Well, good.
Good. I'm obviously paraphrasing that.
Yeah,
that
yeah, parallel. Yeah, yeah. Well, either way, I enjoyed Easter, and it was delightful.
Good, you did it. I like it.
No, I like Easter. Easter's a great holiday. We spent it with. I hope you were with your family, so you hopefully had fun.
I sure was. I had ham and cheese rolls. That was my Easter dinner of choice.
We had lamb. We actually had beautiful lamb and potatoes and salads. We had an Easter egg hunt. It was amazing.
Wait, you had lamb?
Yes, we had lamb.
There is awful symbolism in this.
There is, but we have a beloved group of people who often gather together for Easter and Thanksgiving. It's kind of the same set, and our hosts always go way above and beyond anything we deserve. I feel stupid. All I bring are like some drinks from Trader Joe's, and they've got this massive spread they spent all day making. But we have a good time. One of our fellows who attends is Muslim, and so that being the case, we don't eat any ham.
Muslim.
So we don't eat any ham or anything like that, and so we often have lamb. And I don't mind that.
How does he feel about the Easter celebration?
I think it is funny. He's the greatest guy on earth. And so I love him for sitting there in a room full of all Mormons and him while he just hangs out and is happy to be with all of us, even though we're blabbering on about, you know, assumed Christian beliefs and truths. But, you know, it's a testament to the wonderful world of religious tolerance and appreciation.
There you go.
I loved it. It was great.
All right, Jeff, let's talk about Sunday school changing. May we?
We may. Tell me more.
So we have Sunday school and gospel doctrine changing. You brought this up. I actually didn't pick up on it too much. I guess they mentioned it in general conference.
They didn't really mention it in general conference. But what they did is they released Tadar Callister from the 70 and then called him as the general Sunday school president. And then pretty quickly in the wake of that, all of a sudden the Sunday school board was going to announce some imminent changes to the approach to gospel doctrine.
So the setup right now, they're testing a program so I guess the youth curriculum changed a while ago where it's less like stand and teach based and more sort of conversation focused, right?
It's less lecture based, and instead they have general themes per month with supporting ideas and stuff, but there's no formal manual. You're just supposed to kind of read and pray, which is ideal, of course, and then go and have a discussion. And it's worked very well for the youth.
Yeah, which honestly would work well. I think that is a great way to teach, you know. If you have your couple of things. When I was a missionary, we would take our lesson. This was before Preach the Gospel. This is how the lessons were supposed to be used. But you take your lesson, you say, "What are our main points here? Here's our five things we need to cover." And then what are some questions that are going to help us have discussion around these things? And that's how we'd structure our discussions that we'd go in and talk about. Make sure that we hit all the key points, make sure that everything was discussed and understood, but there was no like rehearsing from rote memorization what it was. Well, and so the church is doing this with the youth with pretty good results from what they can garner. And now they're beginning to test a similar teaching scenario with adults.
Yeah, in fact, I'd like to...
Jeff, you're not sold on this.
Well, no, I don't have a fully formulated opinion. I would like to give a shout out to a friend of the show, Brad Lammy, who actually said his ward is one of the pilot wards for the program. And both the gospel...
What does he say?
He said it's been good. It's been good for his ward. It's made a difference. It's had more interaction. I think it's interesting because, like you said, I've always felt the lessons are just guidelines. The whole point is to interact and create a discussion. Whenever I've taught gospel doctrine, I've never viewed it like I'm lecturing. I've viewed it like I'm a moderator to just have people. And that's how that's what teaching is. Teaching is not... If you want a straight-up lecture, move to Britain and go to college where you sit in a room and the guy rambles for an hour and a half and doesn't even ask if anyone has questions, and it's over. That's a lecture. That's what it is. If church were like that, it would be very, very poor.
Well, so honestly, I think this is a little bit similar to sort of the Preach My Gospel scenario where good teachers are going to get this and they're going to say, yeah, this is what we've been doing the whole time. Bad teachers are going to get this and they're going to say, this is amazing. This is mind-blowing. True revelation is changing our lives.
Yeah, so I'd like to, we posted this.
Paul Piper is quoted in this article. I know Paul Piper.
Oh, well, good. Way to name drop, Al. Good for you.
I'm just saying.
So, yeah, we had a lot of our listeners, actually, thanks, guys, on Facebook, who commented on this story. Some people are very positive about it. Some are a bit more apprehensive. I think a lot of people are apprehensive because they feel like it's going to actually require us to not study the scriptures because we're going to be dealing in broader principles that will be supported by general conference talks. And if that's what it winds up being, I admit I don't love that either, because I already hate that you go to sacrament meeting half the time and everyone's just giving regurgitated conference talks. They say, hey, give a talk based on so-and-so's talk. And then all everyone is doing is giving a summary of someone else's talk. That's not a talk. That's not thinking through a topic and exploring.
Right. The idea is you should take the theme of that talk and then expound on the
theme. It is. And I think it's been poor. I've always thought we're better off in wards where they have scriptures that might be an assignment. And they say, this is your speaking assignment based on this scripture. Go to town. And likewise, there's something to be said for that in gospel doctrine. And I think my other concern...
I do wonder. I wonder if like the scholarly, which I'll admit, there's not a lot of now anyway, right?
No,
there's not a lot
no.
of the scholarly discussion, but there will be less of a place unless you're the pompous schmo that keeps raising his hand and says, actually, in Zedekiah, it says, you know, like, not that there. Well, I mean, it's just this trade-off where now you don't have a scenario where that's okay to have like very deep scriptural conversation, especially if it's notable that most people are being left out, which most people would if there's not a teacher standing up and expounding on a principle directly.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. And I think the biggest risk you run with this is for good teachers, this will make things better. But if you've got crummy teachers, it's just going to be – it'll actually get worse because there won't be any structure.
Wait, do you – oh, yeah. I mean, it could turn into sort of the Elders Quorum discussion stuff where they read the questions in the back and then start at the beginning of the manual and just read through.
The other thing I worry about, and for the record, I think this is largely a positive step forward, but the other thing that concerns me is that for the youth, it works, but I think for the youth it's good for us to have it be a discussion-based format. You know, you want them to feel involved, and you want to hit on straightforward basic principles. That's good for the youth. But if we apply exactly the same model to gospel doctrine, I think we do risk watering down our possibilities for discussion. It almost takes us into gospel principles realm, basically, with gospel doctrine for what we're talking about. And I wish that gospel doctrine instead, I wish they'd split it, actually, and have basic whatever this is going to be, and then have like an advanced gospel doctrine where it's actually sitting there reading the scriptures, getting into nitty-gritty stuff. I've always felt that that's sorely lacking in church in general because we try to be broad enough for everyone to be happy. But I'd love if they had like an advanced class, go to that, and you can talk about serious, serious stuff if you're the person who doesn't want to have just deal in broad generalizations of topics.
What, man, I can't see that ever succeeding.
No,
I can't see. Because there's value. I mean, you don't want to ostracize like new members that are trying to be integrated and feel like they have to.
Well, that's why
level up.
We'd have
to get to the.
You'd have three steps. New members go to gospel principles first. Then they could go to this broader gospel doctrine, and then if they ever saw fit, they could go to an even more advanced course. I mean, it makes. Why do we?
Dude, what topics would show up in that advanced course? It would be the worst. You'd have all these random
and
like crazy guys trying to push weird. Polygamy emphasized doctrine.
I guess I don't mean
like that's what we get in my wards out in Missouri, man. When you get the guys that quote unquote think that they're advanced in the gospel,
yeah,
they're the douchiest guys.
Right? I guess I don't mean to get totally off the rails, but maybe just use more stuff that you'd find in like an institute manual per se. You know, an institute discussion is bound to be more of a deep dive because you have more time. But to take that approach to a course,
or why not attend an institute class?
Well, for one, I'm not supposed to because I'm over 31 and I'm not allowed anymore.
Can we bring institute back for old people? Know your religions. Can those happen again, please?
Yeah, I don't have time for that.
So the other side effect is now Sunday School Bonanza will be moot. We'll be stopping that.
And for the record, people, this is in pilot mode right now. I honestly don't think we'll see any legitimate change until the new year. I would assume they're going to finish out Old Testament as is, not just going to. They're not just going to turn it around.
And actually, this wouldn't affect Sunday School Bonanza. I mean, we just have broader themes to discuss about. And hopefully we'll be able to give you some more meaningful sort of tidbits to discuss, things to take with you.
Yeah, the biggest downside is I looked forward to finishing 4 years of curriculum and then just letting that rotate on its own forever.
Letting it go.
Let it go. Let it go. That's what I'm talking about.
We've got
some quick other. We'll bounce around here. So some Mormon coins are for sale. I had no idea that the church issued its
coins for sale.
The church actually issued its own coinage back in the early pioneer days of the Salt Lake Valley.
Did you not know this? They established a bank in Missouri, in Illinois, and in Utah. Everywhere they went, they established their own bank.
But did these own banks always have their own currency? I mean, you can establish a bank and still use U.S. currency, but have it be a bank.
Well, yeah, you can. They did all issue their own Mormon currency. Most of it was paper, though. I don't like. I know that there's a few coins, but I've never seen these ones. And it looks like they have some handshaking on them, and then Sloth from Goonies is on one of them.
I believe Sloth.
Some very
that
weird
coins. That really does look like Sloth. From, even the one that's clearly supposed to be the all-seeing eye or something like that.
The eye with the hammerhead shark on
yeah,
top
Yeah, I don't
of
know,
it.
But I see why it's Sloth. Either way, yeah, a lot of this was gold obtained during the gold rush from California, and they had their own coinage because they were too far removed from the U.S. and weren't even part of the U.S., and they weren't really... They were part of Mexico for a year, but they weren't really engaged with Mexico. So they had these coins, and now they're going to be for sale. They could net, you know, up to $1 million in value, which is understandable because they're so rare. It's kind of cool.
And yada, yada, yada.
I'm just disappointed that they did not use Book of Mormon coinage. If you have a chance to create your own monetary system, why are you not busting out whatever that chapter is in 2 Nephi or wherever it is that does Nephite coinage set forth?
That is a great point, Jeff.
I'm just saying it's...
Why is there not a senum of silver and an ante of gold happening?
Yeah, exactly. I'm terrible because I don't even know what chapter that is.
Let's see. There's a good song.
Alma 11.
I think it's I was thinking of the one in I think there's one in Mosiah.
Whatever. Either way.
Mosiah 22.
Move on with your thoughts, Al. Move on.
Let's see. There's a couple that's suing BYU.
Oh, good.
Which I actually don't have a problem with. You can sue entities that the church runs because they are often, I mean, they're not run by church revelation and stuff. I mean, BYU is just a for-profit doing what it does. Let's go screw over poor people and make money off the rich sort of institution. So I don't care that they're suing them. Ralph and Muriel Cybach. They were mission presidents in New York. They've been long-time...
Temple presidents in New York.
Or temple presidents, yeah. Long-time philanthropic contributors to Brigham Young University and BYU Idaho. Done all this stuff, and there's some rhetorical studies account that that BYU set up, supposedly illegally under the IRS, or against IRS regulations, and then BYU went solicited... donations to there to sort of as a tax shelter and blah, blah, blah. Then their son, it appears, was sort of cared over that fund. And after, you know, they felt like the funds were being misappropriated and tried to get them put in another place, the son ended up being bullied and pushed out of his position in places. And grades were changed without proper... You know, the proper education.
Yeah, like there's their son called into question like some random grades being raised from a D to a B+.
So the son came and brought that up, and then he started being bullied, and all this stuff started happening where he was getting moved around. And so it's actually quite the saga. And so they're bringing the lawsuit to trial, and they're not interested in a settlement. They want this stuff to actually change. They don't want money. They want change. And so. It's all going down. BYU, you better lawyer up. Which, luckily, now their president of BYU is a lawyer, so that'll be nice.
It's perfect. It's wonderful. They've done everything they need. Yeah, and just for the record, people often assume that everything at BYU is done through prayer and approval from Salt Lake. I think there's some element of that at the top levels, but by and large, it is run like any other educational bureaucracy.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah. No shocker here. Speaking of BYU, this is anecdotal, so I'll say up front we can't completely confirm it, but some sources have told us that BYU has been issuing a survey to its students, basically asking...
Like a paper survey?
However they're doing it, they're issuing the survey. And they're asking the students to declare their sexual orientation in this survey. Now, the funny thing is, though, the only option is heterosexual.
Would you like to choose option A?
This is like the Crimean election, basically. It's the, you know, there's so, but they say heterosexual, and then you can add whether you have any homosexual attraction or not. But you're not able to declare yourself homosexual. So this really makes me wonder, and this is only BYU, but are they trying to say that no, there are no gay people, it's just heterosexuals?
Well, it's going to be great where they say we ran a survey, we had zero people come back.
Nobody at BYU is gay. There might be some heterosexual people with gay leanings, but that's all that exists. There's no one who's actually gay.
Savvy.
Yeah, so I guess that's going down at BYU. If anyone knows more about this, like we said, a little bit speculative, but if you know anything, let us know. Love to hear about it.
Jeff was excited. The church has bought 140 acres in Florida, so it's now 2.001% of Florida's owned.
Well, maybe they can fix
this is large. They're two like 70-acre parcels, almost absolutely 100% insignificant. They're just buying a little land on the side.
They're adding on to existing parcels by buying.
There you go. Jeff was excited.
I want more orange juice. They've had a freeze this year. Prices are going to go up. I want more OJ.
Fair.
A meeting house in Sparks, Nevada, which is outside of Reno, has been vandalized twice in 1 month. So that's rough.
What do they vandalize? What gangs are in Sparks? All there are FedEx trucks there.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sparks is the shipping capital of America.
Really? I thought that was Memphis because of FedEx. That's where they're global.
No. Sparks, man. All Sparks is shipping and distribution centers.
That's all it is? So apparently, yeah, they had some tagging. I'm looking at the video here. One of them is actually pixelated out in the news report's image. So I'm guessing they drew something like a wiener, something like that.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say, if it was a man that was doing this, chances are it was probably a wiener.
It begs a whole other question. Why is it the male gender, when applying graffiti and vandalizing, is so prone to drawing the male reproductive organ?
Because that's offensive. If you draw women's boobs, not offensive. It just looks like two circles, maybe a plate. You're like, oh, they're spray painting dinnerware or something of that nature.
Okay. Anyway, it stinks for these people in Sparks. I mean, twice in a month to get vandalized. If you've ever seen a church building get vandalized and been present in your community to have it stinks. And then it would be,
any church building.
I mean, cleaning that off, and then next thing you know, boom, shakalaka, back they are. Pretty soon it's going to wind up like one of those buildings in an inner city where they actually have it fenced, you know, fences going around it, and they only open the gate on the Sabbath.
Inner city our pressure. Door.
That is a great song, by the way.
Let's see. We have nothing else, really. A Mormon day of service coming. We don't know when, do we, Jeff?
We just see it going around.
We just know people are getting ready to serve.
Apparently
Jeff and I are both going to protest this and say we're just too lazy to participate.
I serve by being an example, just like Jabari.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Jabari.
It's perfect. I have one parting thought. I was thinking about this recently. What do we need our missionaries? Are you okay with your microphone there, buddy?
Easy, Jeff.
It's falling. Your material is falling. I'm convinced that on top of the wonderful education our missionaries receive in the MTC, given the fact that they are now younger with less, you know, life experience and time away from home experience, we need to inculcate some sort of cotillion or finishing school, something like that, into the MTC experience so that when these 18-year-olds hit the field, they know how to talk to adults. And, you know, we talk all about how to teach gospel principles, but there's no lesson on simply how to have a conversation, how to be personable, how to find general common ground. You find common ground to talk about gospel principles, how to just like be a human and talk to people. What I have found since the age drop is you've got these wonderful kids coming out, but they are just deer in the headlights lost in this world and have no idea what's going on. And I feel that if we were to finish school them, not only would they know how to speak, they would have darling anecdotes to share. They would know how to properly do a place setting. Lots of these things could benefit them.
Yeah, that would be great. Like if they had all the Southern social charms and were just like, Oh, honey, well, the other day, as I was looking out the window, I saw the cutest little bunny. And, like, they all had these dumb stories to share as they came in. Like, it would actually be nice to have something to talk about with them.
I feel like they have nothing
instead
to say.
Instead, they stand awkwardly and twiddle their thumbs, and they're like, Jesus, I'll talk about Jesus.
And I don't know if you've seen it. Have you seen any difference in this with any exchanges with missionaries since the age drop?
I refuse to acknowledge that they exist until they turn 19. Okay. So it hasn't been as bad.
And we're speaking in very broad terms. There are wonderful, they're all wonderful kids, but I feel like social skills wise, there has been a drop since the age.
But I feel like it's, well, and you mentioned this earlier, Jeff, I feel like it's confidence, right? I feel like that's what's missing. It's not so much that,
They're not self-assured at all.
Yeah. That they can't talk to people or that don't have that stuff. It's that, I mean, as a kid, you're not confident to talk to grown-ups, right? And I think there's probably still that disconnect where they're like, I'm 18 and you're 30.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not like you and I or anybody else was perfect when we were 19 or, you know, 20 when I went out, but...
Well, perfect-ish. I mean, can we say perfect?
But think about the other experiences we had by that point. Either we'd done college, I'd worked full-time, you had worked full-time. We'd had experiences that had forced us to get out there and associate with everyone else. And I'm not saying 18-year-olds haven't done that. But when you go straight from the care,
I would say that
when you go,
what have 18-year-olds done? They graduated from high school. All they've ever talked to is other 15-year-olds.
Yeah. So there's something to learn there. So I propose that we amend the curriculum and have a finishing school added to their thing.
Yeah.
With
charm school. Let's put them through charm school.
With cultural advisors for every country in which they might serve.
Oh, that's really,
because you got to be careful. You can't wave like this in Brazil, like you can't hear. It means you're calling a prostitute. You know, you got to teach some things you learn in the field on accident, and that's okay. But other things, come on.
Anyway, Jeff, it's been delightful. I think you're great, and I think I'm great.
You see, you sound self-assured. This is what you need to teach the missionaries.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, all right.
And well, thanks everybody for joining us. We're excited that you've all been a part of this world with us. As always, you can reach us, shoot us an email at contact at This Week in Mormons. Complain, and we will entertain you. Tell us what we're doing wrong.
Or Al will send a snarky email back to you that will be rude, and I will have to chastise him for it.
I am 100% of emails that come in get traditionally a snarky email reply from me.
Yeah, but
and then Jeff says, "Al, we want more." And I say, "I know, Jeff, but they've come to expect this from me, and so I think for me, it's okay."
You're just
and
playing.
Jeff
you're
says, all right, and nice.
You're playing a character. This isn't how you are outside of your. You're playing the character of Al Doan in quotes. This is what this is.
I am a Stephen Colbert for Mormonism. That's what I
exactly. Well done. And folks, also, of course, thisweekinmormons.com. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, whatever you like. RSS. And find us on all the other social media outlets.
Facebook.com/thisweekinmormons. Twitter.com@TheRealTwin.
Yeah, all that stuff.
All that stuff.
We're all over the place. Really just go to them and search for This Week in Mormons. And your life will be blessed. Promise. That's promise. True. Blessings.
That is accurate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, then.
All right, man. Jeff, have a great week, buddy.
Thanks, Al. You too. Folks, we appreciate you taking the time to be here with us. Making This Week in Mormons. You said that last week. Making This Week in Mormons a part of your life. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Just wonderful. She tried pesto for the first time.
You said
that
last week.
Just wonderful. That's it, folks. This is Twim going out. We hope you have a great week. Talk to you soon.
Hello there. Angel from my nightmare.
Where are you? I'm so sorry.